This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 15th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long, and we are broadcasting live from the final table of Apes. It is still going on.
Good God, man. 6:20 in the morning, I went to sleep, and they're still playing. You know, I knew it was late when my wife was getting up for work, and I was still playing. It was insane last night. Absolutely insane.
Well, and I thought it was late when my wife went to bed before me, and that was like at 2 o'clock.
I was shocked to see you still playing. I thought for sure you just would have sat out and get blinded off, because you get up pretty early.
Yeah. Well, you know, I took about four of those five-hour shot things, so I was good for about 20 hours. So,
my God. Well, I tell you, last night was an historic night for a lot of reasons, and we'll get to those later. But congratulations to Steph's hubby for outlasting our Player of the Year, Poker Geek MN. And it was cool watching it unfold at table, too, because he was still monitoring other players that could catch him and beat him. And but he made the final table as well, finished second, and took down Player of the Year. And Steph's hubby, that's his second banana this year.
That's right. And
nice
I think
job.
Earlier in the tournament, he was at my table, and his wife was asking whether there's a bigger monkey for the main event. And I told him, just take the monkey to the buffet.
So, like a good Player of the Year, Poker MN, Geek MN, called in and had something to say about the tournament. So let's see what he has to say here.
Hey, Chris and Scott. This is Poker Geek. And it is right now 7:23 on the PokerStars clock, and we just got done finishing the final horse event for Apes. That is a whopping 10 hours and 23 minutes that we played. And despite me finally taking the lead for a little bit over Steph's hubby, he once again bested me in the Apes thing, but at least I managed to lock up Player of the Year. And I'd like to congratulate Potty Train Me, The Law, Gap Bandit, and Rice for doing really well, and they almost, I thought for sure one of them was going to take Player of the Year. Anyway, keep up the great work on the podcast, and I am going to maybe go to bed for a little bit.
Pretty dominating performance this year, right?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
He
and you
won,
know what
like,
else?
What, nine bananas and came in second in 14 other events, right? It's pretty impressive for only 12 events.
You know, and the thing about it, too, is I watched him and I was like, oh, Poker MN might not win Player of the Year now because he's going all the way down, and he was like down to 500 chips at one point or something that low. And I thought, oh my God, he's going to be finally out. He's not going to friggin' win one finally. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's like in the top 10. And then, of course, he was chip leader
it's
after
like
that
a cockroach.
For a while. Oh, it just won't go away. He's like, share.
Well, you know, and the best thing about Poker Geek MN winning the Player of the Year is that, you know, because we had to report his the value of his trophy to the IRS, we're actually going to have to get his full legal name, which we do not know yet.
Yeah, so we're going to have him on the show probably sometime early February, like we do every year with our Player of the Year. And, you know, we actually, it was a historic night, too, and when we listen to this next clip, you'll find out why. Actually, this comes from who's known as Hats and Eyeglasses. He's a nephew of the woman who wrote that excellent book. And on the PokerStars site, he's like, it's like RDGVLL whatever. So, but anyway, he made the final table last night, and something interesting happened. He called in.
Morning, guys. It's just getting up to go to work.
merely 2 hours after I went to sleep, after the chop was determined for the main event. Boys were still playing. Congrats to Geek and Steph's hubby. Those boys are nuts. 10 hours, they're playing out for $40. I think something's wrong with the structure. I'm tired. My ass got chewed out by my old lady.
Yes, I totally agree with the structure. It was awesome. It was an awesome structure, but it was so awesome. Like having too much ice cream.
Yeah, it was too much awesome.
It makes you sick.
It was
like
having hot fudge and butterscotch
right.
on a Sunday.
It was just so good that we were playing at 6 a.m. in the morning with four people still, and it's just not right. If it was a noon event, it'd have been awesome. But, you know, the other thing, too, is, for those of you who don't know, I made the final table last night.
That's right.
And for the first time ever in Ape's history, we made a deal at the final table.
Wusses!
Everyone wanted to go
Wusses!
To bed. Everyone wanted, and sure enough.
Sleep is overrated.
As soon as we made the deal, two guys went away.
Yeah. That's what happens.
You know, our hats and eyeglasses
friend.
You friends.
Killed the competition.
And then, Nuance, who had the chip lead since 1958, he was there at the final table, and he's like, he has twins. You know, young babies. So he's like, I'm going
always
to bed.
Playing the kid card, you know.
Hey,
we coddle these kids these days.
You can see his little avatar's got two little kids on it. You know that he's got no sleep as it is. So whenever he gets a chance, he shouldn't be playing poker. You know, he made a good point about the structure being really slow. And I thought, I mean, you got your money's worth for $22. I mean, you know, and you know what else, too? Poker Stars was awesome. Of course, you should have seen us last night trying to figure out how to do a deal, because none of us have ever made a deal at the final table in a private event, because there's no like button to say call the tournament
right.
guy.
Right.
So we're all like rushing to find like, all right, I'm going to email support and hope they get to us. So we didn't know what to do, and no one sat out. So people were still raising and stuff. I lost like 4,000 in chips just trying to find a moderator. So then when we finally get the guy, it was like, Keystone Cops. Well, what do you guys want to do? Well, I don't know. What do you want to do? Well, I don't know. What do you want to do? Well, let's ask Mikey. He eats anything. I mean, it was ridiculous. Nobody knew how to make a chop or what to do. So finally, Hats and Eyeglasses says, how about everybody get $70 and whatever is left over, we let them play for first and second. And then some people were good with that. And then some people made some modifications. But finally, we got it done. And some like casual observer starts typing in LOL. You guys are hilarious. This is the worst deal I've ever seen. And then he said that I had the best part of it because I had like a low chip stack. I had the worst chip stack there easily. So I was like, oh, I made a good amount of money and I'm happy with it. But then I go on a tear and I finished fourth, and I would have made more money if I didn't make a deal. But I was happy with the deal. I really wanted to make the top three because I make more money, and it didn't happen. But it was a great night, and only 46 people showed up because. You know, it's the main event, you know,
yep,
and not everybody
right.
can play horse, and it was a good event.
Well, some people got shut out, too, because it was the fourth day of it, and, they just waited the last minute, and we just couldn't accommodate them, and that was just unfortunate. But
oh, my God, that's
but hilarious. No, I'm excited for the next Apes 5. No, we're not ready to announce the schedule yet, but we've put forth a rather, I don't know, radical is the right word, but a very different looking Apes for next year, proposed to Stars. So when we find hear back from them and everything's finalized, we'll let everybody know on the show. But looking for a way to kind of make it a little better for everyone.
Yeah, and it's gonna be, and it's gonna be it's gonna be bigger and better than always is, and we're excited about it. And some of the things that people were talking about last night will come to fruition in this if we get the approval for the schedule and. And some surprises, too, so stay tuned for that. Hopefully we'll be able to announce it within the next week or so. But anyway, it was a good event, and I'm glad that it turned out the way it did. You know, Scott, during the week I was watching television, and...
You?
Yeah, it was late at night. I was trying to fall asleep, and there was like an episode
of... Apes.
There's an episode of like Law & Order on, and I never watched that show.
There's always an episode of
but
Law & Order.
There's always an episode on. I'm like, I'm missing something. Cause
Law & Order preempts Sesame Street. It's on so often.
If there's that many episodes, that many variations of this damn show, it's got to be worth watching. So I'm like, all right, I'll watch this one, whatever. And I had no idea what the story was going to be at all. It ends up being about this guy who kills this woman over an online poker debt.
I've seen that one.
You've seen that one?
No.
Oh, all right.
Every Law & Order has someone killing someone.
But I really thought that, maybe Hollywood would, sort of progress and get a little better than the old I see your five and call. They started doing that again, and I was like, oh. But then they start talking about online poker.
Right.
And the name of the poker website they're talking about was FastLanePoker.com, which I thought was hilarious.
Yes, yes. I used to play on that. Yeah.
Oh, man. And then they had this woman playing like a football player at a table in Atlantic City, and he throws his diamond ring in the pot, right? In Atlantic City, no
yes,
less, right?
Excellent.
And she wins the pot and takes the ring and starts putting it in his face and jawing at him that she won a $100,000 ring off him. And I'm just like, man, is Hollywood ever going to learn? I mean, I know Casino Royale had this, you know, it's a feasible hand, that straight flush, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
But then they talked about, you know, how did they make all this money at these partners? Because he killed her because she went into debt, whatever. So they're like, well, this is what they would do. They'd go online, and they'd both sit at the same table, and then they would, and he starts talking about how they would cheat online. I'm like, no, excellent. I don't know about that, though.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, those folks that that write in the newspaper how to make a bomb, you know, so in case those stupid terrorists just haven't figured it out yet. So let me ask you, Law and Order is pretty famous for having guest appearances, right?
Yeah.
They bring a lot of people on there. Was Russ Hamilton a guest on this show?
He was the advisor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, at the end of the show, it said it's best to be able to see their whole cards if you want to really take a lot of money from somebody online. But anyway, I just really thought Hollywood would evolve, and it kind of evolved by introducing online poker, but it didn't really evolve as far as knowledge and doing it properly.
Well, you know, and in case you run out of Law and Order, which is impossible.
I know.
Pretty soon you'll have other great TV to watch, Chris, if you count looking at our ugly mugs on TV as good TV. But I'm sure our moms think it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we just fresh off the going up to Chicago and helping out Kirk up there with the Windy City Poker Championship. And now our good friends over at the Orange Park Kennel Club in Jacksonville have just yesterday hired us to come up and do the TV analysis and production and bring Kirk down for the big Chad Brown Invitational. End of the month. The final table is on February 1st. The tournament starts a couple days before that. So if you're in the Jacksonville area and want to play in that event and hang out with Chad Brown, that's great. And if not, just come out and watch us make fools of ourselves on TV.
You know, and I'm sure that that Chicago show is going to be airing around that time, too. So, I mean, we're going to be all over the freaking cable
We're selection. Saturating. Saturating the airwaves.
It's like viral ante up.
And then real quick, we got another team tournament coming up at Tampa Bay Downs. They had so much fun with us last month for our big event that I flamed out in. You actually played fairly well.
Yeah.
You just didn't win any money for us.
That's what happens when you flop a set and lose to a guy who plays Queen Deuce suited for a flush.
But they enjoyed it so much that they're going to make it a monthly event now, every third Tuesday at Tampa Bay Downs, 6:30 p.m. will be a team tournament, and it'll be for cash now instead of a cruise on the ante up, so you have more money. But you can use that cruise to buy, buy a cruise.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, don't let that hold you back from not sailing with us if you happen to win. But come out and play with us the third Tuesday every month at Tampa Bay Downs.
I notice you have a lot of paperwork here today. The ante up news desk isn't big enough for you to keep it all at home. You got to bring it here with you.
Yeah, exactly. I like to spread it out, because I'm a little Walter Cronkite-like.
All right, what do you got this week?
All right. The much-anticipated PokerStars.net North American Poker Tour has been announced, and the first event was the recently concluded PokerStars Caribbean Adventure in the Bahamas. Future events will be at the Venetian in Las Vegas in February and at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut in April.
Didn't take Mohegan Sun long to grab a little competition counterpart to Foxwoods' WPT stuff, huh?
And I think there's going to be plenty more of these events planned, so it's pretty cool that now that not only do we have circuit events and WPT events, but we have PokerStars events.
Yeah, absolutely. Big news in Pennsylvania. Governor Ed Rendell has signed a bill authorizing table games, including poker, in the state's slot casinos. It's expected to be at least 6 months before the games are up and running. What do you think?
Spreading like wildfire.
That's right, man. Poker is taking over.
There's a bill introduced in Alabama, too, I just read this morning, too, for poker. Of course, it's Alabama, so that lawmaker has probably been shot and dragged behind a truck or something now for ever thinking about gambling in that state. But, if it happens, that's great. But good news for the folks in Pennsylvania. And then finally, very sad news, well-loved pro Amir Vahidi has died of complications from diabetes. He was famous for his cigar, his beard, and his big heart, and will certainly be missed.
Okay, well, last week we talked a little bit about how to beat the rake or the rake, and there's some more rake things. So someone called us up, Gundam from the forums. I think he's from Florida,
from
too.
Florida, yeah.
Yeah, he's a local guy. Gave a call in to talk about the rake a little more.
Hey, this is Gundam Poker. I'm just calling, and somebody mentioned something about a rake. The winner and the loser pay a rake in a cash game, and that's just not true. If you lose the hand, you're not paying a rake on that. You're just you're paying how much money you were betting, and only the people who scoop the pots pay the rake. And it is actually possible to pay a huge amount of rake when your profit's really small. So that is probably what the mailbag person was talking about. And it's definitely possible to break even on profits and end up paying $50,000 in rake at the end of the year.
All right, here's the thing, Chris. Now, I mean, I don't know exactly what you meant by that. I'll let you roll.
Did you say or did
no,
I say?
No, you said
I
it. Said, you
what
said
did
it.
I say?
And I kind of let you. Yeah, I think you said something to the fact that both winners and losers pay the rake. And I kind of let it roll off because, you know, I think you can make a case for it being correct, whether whatever you meant it to be.
Well, well, were we talking about limit at that time, or were timed rake? I said timed rake.
Well, timed rake could
play.
Be. See, I mean, we can. It's our show, so we can like revise history
remember,
as much as we want.
I don't remember saying anything like that, but okay, whatever.
But here's the thing: in the literal sense, yes, it is the winners
right.
who pay the rake,
which I mean, is what I'm happy about.
If you think about the pushing the pot to you, and they don't take the rake out, and then they ask you for $5 back, then yes, it's coming out of the winner's stake. But this is what I will to try to cover our collective rear hinds. I will propose that the losers pay a rake in a sense, because that is money that's going off the table. So think of it for this way. If you go to a home game and you have eight players and they all buy in for $100 at the end of the day, assuming no one had to rebuy, there's still $800 on the table. So even if you're a loser, when you win some pots, there's more money to win.
Great
correct?
Point, dude. Great point.
All right. And I thought about this because we have our good friend Mike Fasso in the studio. He's hanging out here messing up the radio station controls and stuff.
Sitting back with some green tea, ice cream.
And I think back to our great Andy Up meetup out in California when the conference had that awesome scam out there where they invited us over for bring your home game to the conference. And we sat down and they gave us a lot of free food. And we're like, hey, these dudes are awesome. And what happened was, you know, those same eight people that I was just talking about put $100 on the table, and in 3 hours, there's $300 on the table. The other $500 is in that little box next to the dealer. So in that sense, the losers pay rake as well, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. Thanks for getting my back on that, buddy. I knew I could rely on you. All right, well, 813-448-1120 is the number. If you call us, we'll give you something cool like we're about to do for Gundam right now.
And Gundam will give you some Texas Hold'em strategy cards from GreatPokerHands.com. They don't yet have a rate calculator on them, but we'll be talking to Nick at Great Poker Hands about maybe helping you out with that.
All right, well, we got another Florida guy contacting us today. You would think that our magazine's based in Florida or something, you know.
Yeah, the hand of the week is Florida today. So it's Florida-themed Annie up here
today.
Wow.
All right, well, his name is Nick Besser, and he's from Bellevue. And you want to read it? Because you're so good at it.
Yeah. We'll see whether I can get through this. I tried to edit it down, but, you know, it's a good letter, right?
All right.
All right, here we go. He says he was playing a $150 no-limit Texas Hold'em tournament at Ocala Poker Room. We've been
one
there.
One of our favorite rooms,
yep. We like going there. I have about 50K in chips with everyone else at my table well above the chip average of 100K, all right? The blinds were at 1,000, 2,000 with a 400 ante. The last two hands, he had been dealt pocket pairs, shoved all in pre-flop, and won the antes. The blinds maybe had one color. This hand, he is one behind the button. The under the gun raises to 8,000, Chris, all right? I have a pair of sixes and shove all in for 38,900 over the 8,000 raise. The under the gun calls, which is about maybe 1/12 of his stack, and shows ace-king offsuit. An ace hits the flop, of course, and I am eliminated. Was I a donkey by going all in after a raise, or should I have just called the $8,000 bet and wait for the flop?
Well, if you're going to do a raise, a re-raise, that would be about 24 grand, and he only has 38, so that'd be like almost 3/4 of his stack. So you have, if you're going to re-raise, you have to shove there anyway.
Right.
So there's nothing wrong with that. But you only have pocket sixes, and you got a pretty big stack pretty early on in the table. Putting in a raise, I think that's the kind of hand where you can afford to call 8,000. You still have 30,000 if you don't like the flop and you let it go. I don't think shoving is the right thing there, especially when the guy could only a 1/12 of a stack and cover you, and he's got a decent hand from where he did the raise. So
I
would
say. Well, it's a pretty significant amount to call, too. So I would suggest, and of course, I am always the girl.
Right, you're going to say fold. We know.
I'm going to say fold. I mean, why not? I mean, it's under the gun raising.
No, I understand. I'm
and
just
we're
saying.
A fairly short stack there, and we got sixes. I mean, he got lucky two hands in a row with fours and tens.
Well, it looks
these
like
things
too,
go with threes,
position,
you know?
Though. It looked like he'd have position. If he bets 8,000, he still have 30,000 left, 900, almost 31,000.
Well, what are you going to hope for on the flop?
Undercards or a six, maybe?
Well, okay, great, yeah. I would love a six, yes.
Well, if
thank
a ragged
you.
Flop comes and he's got ace
correct,
king.
Hold on, let me get my abacus out here. I believe, let me carry the one here. There's only two sixes left in the deck.
I said, or undercards, yeah, or a ragged yeah, flop. Yeah, a ragged yeah, flop. Yeah. Too.
You're going to call him a fourth of your stack, or fifth of your stack. Hoping for undercards, raggedy, or one of these two golden sixes.
Well, I'm saying
well, you got under
that
under the gun razor.
This guy clearly
it's
has a huge
stack. It's not like you're in the big blind, the button raised.
This guy under the gun has a huge stack. Clearly was a bully, you know, and your sixes were probably good there. And they were good. He got a good read on the guy.
But still, you're at best, you're a coin flip. And here's the thing, when you raise, as he says, 1/12 of a stack, this guy isn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah,
so we'll re-raise is like a bug on a windshield to him.
Yeah, I think it's either fold or re-raise, though. I mean, if you're going to call...
Oh, it's a fold. It's just a fold.
If you're going to call, you better really know this guy's got ace-king, and when the flop misses him, then you got to shove. So, yeah, I don't think he's a donkey, though.
No, no.
The way you're building it up, you're making him sound like he's a donkey, and I would never call one of our listeners a donkey.
I'm trying to make you a donkey. Because you're trying
you failed.
To save him from being a donkey.
You failed.
No, he is donkless.
Donkless. That does not sound good.
All right, Nicholas. Well, I'm sorry you got eliminated from the tournament. You should have folded. But here, you won a wonderful uncut sheet of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. Only a couple of those on the swag shelf, so consider yourself very special.
Put them in a frame. Hang them in the room. Looks pretty good. All right, look at a brand new, fresh, out-of-the-oven mystery.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, The Case of Singing in the Rain. We are playing a 1-2 no-limit cash game on a lazy afternoon.
Lucky for me, I brought a cigar.
Under the gun folds, under the gun plus one folds, and the EP raises it up to six. I'm on his left, and I look down at Ace of Diamonds, Queen of Diamonds. Now, if I was in late position, this might be a good place to just flat, but I decide I'm going to re-raise here and discourage a bunch of position callers. And I give my EP raiser a chance to re-raise me if he has a monster, which would allow me to escape. I make it 14, and it folds back around now to the EP raiser, who calls. The pot is $19, and we see a flop heads up.
It's just business as usual, sir.
Flop comes down, ace of hearts, jack of spades, ten of clubs, and the EP checks. It's interesting that he checks because he gives me my positional play, and it's a tough one. It's the old cliche, I'm either way ahead or way behind. I don't see a lot of draws here, so I opt to keep the pot small and check behind. Perhaps it will look like a trap. So the turn comes the eight of clubs, and really, unless he had nine queen, this changes nothing. And he checks again. Now anytime I get two checks, that's a green light, so I'm betting out $15 into the pot of 19. The EP player calls.
What's he thinking?
The river's the seven of diamonds, and that's really a complete blank. But now he comes out firing and bets 44 into the pot of 49. That sends me into the tank. What should we do?
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
It's always a pleasure to have my fellow Paisano back on the show. And it was funny, last night we were playing, and they were busting my chops in the chat about your non-poker stories and what's best about the show. And then someone finally said, you got to have Fasso back on. And I giggled, and I was like, he's coming on tomorrow. You guys have no idea. But we're happy to have him back. Mike the Bard Fasso. Mike, thank you so much for coming back. I can't wait to hear about you guys' trip.
It's great to be here, Chris. Unfortunately for the two of us, Scott and me, the trip was not a financial success. It was.
Have you ever had a financially successful trip?
I haven't with you, ever. And I'm starting to wonder if there's something to that. But I did have a good time, and I just would say, first of all, that we went to Biloxi for the Southern
Poker Championship.
That's what it was,
the Beau Rivage.
And the tournaments were terrific. The tournament director, Mr. Grooms,
Johnny Grooms,
did a great job. The structures were fantastic. You got plenty of play, especially in the two limit events that we played in. But I would have to say this about Biloxi. One of the things that I loved about Biloxi, and I was the last time I was there was 05 before the hurricane. The people are so friendly there, Scott.
Gosh darn it, they are.
I mean, how many times? I mean, darling, baby. Yep. I mean, what do you need, baby? I mean, hey, darling, what's up? Yep. But sometimes I think that friendliness goes a little over the edge, and okay. It happened to me at the snack bar. I was just waiting to order a sandwich, all right? I mean, I'm not really trying to look for a life partner at this point. And I hear from behind me in the line for the sandwich, I hear this, boy, am I tired. And I kind of look around over my shoulder and, you know, nod or whatever and acknowledge this guy. And he's, boy, am I tired. And then I guess he wants to talk to me, so I turn around. He says, do you sleep all night? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, do you sleep through the whole night, a full 8 hours? Do you ever get up and go to the restroom when you're sleeping? And I said, well, I don't know. Usually I sleep for the whole 8 hours. I mean, sometimes I get up. I don't know. I mean, who are you anyway?
He goes, can I see some ID, please?
This guy's going to check your prostate and ask you about your bladder pretty soon. Good God.
He said, boy, I tell you, I am so tired. I get up every hour and a half to go to the restroom. And I'm like, wow, that really is terrible. He says, I was doing all right. I got my Flomax. And,
oh, my God.
But I left my Flomax at home. I got a month's supply. I said, okay, well, I'm sorry to hear that. Anyway, could I have a pastrami sandwich, please, and get the hell out of here? But, I mean, people are just so friendly. They want to tell you everything about them, and it was fun.
The next thing he was going to probably ask if you wanted to go camping.
Yeah, can you have Mike in a kayak out there, rafting down the Colorado?
The man who canoe too much.
But, of course, the other great part about traveling with Scott...
is border crossings.
Mr. Toad's wild ride to the airport. Hey, we're going east to the airport. Should we be going east or west? And he's got his BlackBerry in his lap, and he's trying to scroll through his BlackBerry.
Oh, no.
And he tells me, oh, there's a phone number to the airport on here somewhere. Scott, please, please, please. Brake, gas, brake, gas, brake, gas. It's like, oh, my God. I made it back alive. It was a miracle.
Yeah, we almost had to take the morning flight out because we misjudged where we were in the time.
We?
Well, you weren't being very helpful there, Mr. BlackBerry novice. But the transportation was interesting. We get there, and not once, but the second time in New Orleans, I have been told I have had to take a minivan.
Oh, a minivan?
A minivan. And I sighed, and then the woman behind the counter said, hey, but it's great for picking up soccer moms. I guess that was our way of saying, all right, I guess we're getting a minivan.
Right? Yeah.
And but, of course, you know how much how skillful I am in the parking garages, though, Chris. Though,
right? Yeah, and people call you racist when you're in there, too, so
that's
I'm really
right.
Looking forward to this.
That's right. No, I was in total control of where our vehicle was at all times, even though it didn't appear that way. And I was in complete control of which direction to get out.
All right, so we're trying to find
the garage
trying to find the van to get the hell out of here, and with all my money still left behind in the casino somewhere. And Scott takes us up the elevator to the third floor, and we walk out bitterly cold, by the way, into the garage.
Bitterly.
And he says, oh, the car's not there. It was right there, but what's this thing, this barrier here? I don't remember seeing that. We get back in the elevator, go up one flight, walk out on the fourth floor, bitterly, bitterly cold.
Because you're higher up, too. It's even colder.
Walk out to the walkway. The car's not here either. I knew it was here. I thought it was on four. If it's not on three, it must be on four. Walk back in the elevator. Go up to 5. Walk out bitterly, bitterly cold. I mean, it was so cold that my ears felt like they were freezing and like tinkling off the side of my head. Oh. They were frozen solid. 5th floor. Where's the car? I knew I parked it here somewhere. Well, I can tell you what, Scott. I'm going to go back and stand in the lobby. Whenever you get it figured out, you just come and get me. Anyway, he finally found it. Then he tries to get out of the garage, and I jokingly said, well, in order to get out, he didn't know, you know, how to follow the exit signs. Yeah, I said, you go up. And he says, up, okay. I'm like, Scott, that was a joke. If you go up, you'll be on the roof. You have to go down to get out. All right, so that was, you know, typical Scott, but it was kind of enjoyable. If it wasn't so cold, it would have been better.
See, now the non-poker stories when Faso is here are way better.
Yeah, all right, that's true.
All right. He puts it all in context and cuts you off when he knows he's got to get to the point and... Gotta have him on more often.
All right. Well, we have one more non-poker before we actually talk about what little poker we actually ended up playing there. But speaking of bitterly cold here, I am. I thought I was a true Floridian now, right?
Yeah.
I that good Midwestern stock melted out of me long ago. But talk about a weather pansy I'm traveling with here. 2:46 in the morning. Beep. Fire alarm, fire alarm. Everybody please exit the Beau Rivage. So we get dressed, we go down. Fortunately, we're on the 4th floor, so we only had a couple flights to go down. We walk outside and boosh! You would think that we just dropped in Hoth or somewhere like that. As Faso had to shuffle like the 10 feet from the outside of the thing to the lobby because they let us hang out in the lobby and gamble in the casino while the whole burning thing is burning down. But we could still gamble there. But my God, was he freaking out about how cold it was.
It was bitterly, bitterly cold. Have I mentioned that?
No, actually, bitterly? Really?
Yeah. Bitterly.
Wow.
And they herded us down. But, I mean, what had happened was that some clown had pulled a fire extinguisher off the wall and sprayed his buddy. And that caused thousands of people to have to trudge down dozens of flights of stairs. In our case, only 4. But
yeah. But the best part of this is after an hour, they allowed us to return to our room. So Fast and I quickly deducted the math because we're good at calculating odds correctly. And knowing that there were going to be 4 gazillion people waiting in line to get on the elevators. And we only had to go up 4 floors, right?
Yeah.
So why not just go back up the stairs? Turns out, the stairs only work one way at the Beau Rivage.
Oh, no.
Well, it's a fire door. So
it is a fire door.
They're all locked.
But here's what I'm going to say. If they're not going to let you walk back up the stairs, they should make those stairs a slide. So when it comes to a fire drill, you should just boof, like you know on those planes, and then slide all the way down. Why not?
Yeah, they want to get piled up at the end and start, lawsuits galore.
Well, we saw people with, walkers coming down 29 flights of stairs, just push Granny onto the slide and let her slide down.
Scott's in this big crowd of people that were all jammed trying to get back to the elevators, and Scott's like, this is baloney. We need to, all the fat people need to go to the back. And I said, Scott, if that was the case, you'd need to go to the back.
Oh, man.
Anyway, it was an adventure.
All right, let's talk some poker here. We went there to play some tournaments,
right.
And we both had good runs, and I was going to come on here and talk about how impressed I was that I lasted 10.5 hours in a tournament, and I've never done that in my life, and of course, 27 of our Apes members last night did the same thing, so I guess it's not that big of a deal, but we got there, we played the stud 8 first, and I made it to 20th place, I think. 10.5 hours,
wow.
No money, just a free buffet.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the stud 8 was a little bit tough for me because I never made a low. I never made a flush.
You never made a high.
I never made a high. See, if it's high low and you never make a high or a low, then that's going to make it kind of hard to win the tournament. Seriously, I sat there for our tournaments were kind of mirror images. Scott went deep in the stud 8, and I busted out fairly early. I went late into the night in the Omaha tournament, and Scott had a horrendous bust out early in the Omaha tournament. Neither one of us cashed in either of the tournaments, and that's why I've got a major announcement.
Ooh, a major announcement.
I have played my last tournament. Seriously. I was thinking about this when I came back, and it was a good thing for me to go through this trip because, first of all, 90% of the field is not going to get anything, ever. All right? Now,
hey, that's not fair. We all got buffets. There's a darn good buffet there, too.
If you had subtracted my tournament entries, the single tables that I didn't do anything at either, and the no limit, which I shouldn't have played, but I did anyway at the 1-2 table, and it just counted what I played at limit,
I would subtract all the poker playing you
all
did.
The if you take away all the poker playing I did, I would have come home even. No, but seriously, I'm done with tournaments because it's just too much of a crapshoot. And I'm done with no limit hold'em. I'm only going to play I'll play on our cruise or whatever. But no, I'm not playing on the tournament. But I'll be on the cruise. But it's too much of a crapshoot, and I'm just done with tournaments. This really was an eye opener for me.
Have you ever heard the story Esfandiari and the bad beat? Where if he ever gets caught telling a bad beat story, he's got to pay somebody like $10,000.
Right, right.
Can we hold you to this? And if we ever see you in a tournament, you have to pay Scott and me $100 each?
I'm never playing a live tournament again.
Okay, so...
Wait a minute, $100? I thought we were going to do $10,000.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you got to pay us $10,000. But see, right. he might pay us $100. He might be stupid enough to pay us $100. He'll never pay us $10,000.
No, he's only stupid enough to pay you $100.
But you are serious?
I'm serious. And here's what I admire about Scott. Scott, during this whole trip, to my knowledge, never played a single hand of no limit poker, either a single table satellite, which is no limit, or a no limit ring game. He played the Omaha, the stud, and then he played the 4/8s and the some other higher things that he maybe
should. That's really wild. Now you mentioned that. That's right. I did not play one hand of no limit.
That's right.
Or pot limit or anything. It was all limit.
That's right.
It was glorious.
But every time we go to Vegas, that's all you play, it seems. Like every time we go there, you're like, I think my no limit game's getting better. I'm going to play. And then you play a bunch of no limit games there. It's weird.
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of weird.
It is weird.
You know, again, we said that, you know, it's a great setup there at the Beau Rivage, so if you're going to go back, or, I mean, it's still going on for a couple of weeks, so no reason you can't go now, but great setup, good structures, it's well run. The one kind of curious thing, I think, when we first got there, you know, we flew in, we hauled ass over to Biloxi from New Orleans, got there to buy into the Stud 8 tournament, we get to the little buy-in area, and it says, buy-in chips and cash only. Redeem casino chips at the cage. We're like, all right, that's cool. You know, we got cash, you know. So we walk up, and Faso gives the nice little lady $340, and she says, I can't take cash. And so we're both looking at each other, and we're looking at the sign, and making sure that that C-A-S-H is the same word in the South as it is here in Florida. And she's like, you got to go to the cage to buy buy-in chips. All right. So we truck over to the cage, we give them $300 and $340, and they give us 3 buy-in chips and our $40 back. So we're like, all right. So then we walk all the way across the room back to the registration desk, give the lady the 3 buy-in chips and $40 in cash, and she gives us her entry. Someone explain this to me!
Wow.
Someone explain this to me!
Wow. So the prize pool is in chips, and the rake is cash.
Exactly.
Is there a reason for that? They want to put it into the
probably,
safe right away?
That's what I'm saying. Somebody needs to explain it to you.
Wow, that's weird. That is weird.
And I probably should have asked Johnny there. He's a real great guy. He took a lot of time to sit down and talk to me. And man, did I learn a lot about this tournament. So we talked a lot. It was all off the record, so I don't want to tease anyone in. But no, it's a really a big undertaking for these folks to do these big tournaments, and he did a good job. But the one thing that I would like to see... here's the thing: when I realized about poker, the hardest thing about poker, right? It's not learning the strategy or learning the games or being the peak performance. It's overcoming annoying people.
If now you know why we struggle in the home games, Scott. Yeah.
If you can overcome annoying people,
we do, Chris. Don't we? Yes.
If you can overcome annoying people, you will be the world champion every single year of your life. And so I'm going to share a couple of the characters that we met there. In the Stud 8 event, Faso at least made it to the dinner break, which I didn't do in the Omaha event. But we were going on dinner, and Mike's like, hey, do you know that horribly annoying woman who's always chatting on her cell phone? And I'm like, no, I didn't really notice her. He's like, oh my God, she's horrible. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I go back and take my seat. And this woman gets moved to my table. She proceeds to talk for the next 27 years without taking a breath. Tells the dealers how to chop the pot. She compliments the dealers. Hey, I'm watching you. You're doing really good. You know, these dealers have never dealt before. And then when it gets to a break, there's nothing to talk. So, good thing she's got a cell phone, so she picks that up and calls people. She got eliminated from the tournament, Chris, and she would not leave the table.
Oh, no.
She was still yapping for another 20 minutes.
Oh, my God.
But my favorite player of the trip was it was in the Stud of Eight event. We were pretty late, you know, like I said, 10 hours in. We were about 20 minutes before they ended it for the night. And I was kind of tired. So a little bit before that, I saw a guy wave the tournament director over, and he's like, hey, what happens if I have to go to the bathroom? And the tournament director kind of looks at him a little quizzically and says, well, you know, they'll collect your antes and your bring-ins if you have any until you get back. He's like, but I got to go really bad.
They'll still collect.
Yeah, so, yeah, a degree of taking leakage will let him keep his blinds.
So, you know, the tournament director and all professionalism, you know, just kind of repeated what he said. What I wish the tournament director would have said is, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you had to go really bad. Why didn't you say that right away?
Stop the tournament clock.
Yes. Hold on, folks. Yeah, we're going to pause here. Jim here on table one has to take a four-alarm wee-wee. So what we're going to do is just shut down the tournament, let him go to the restroom. When he comes back and he's comfortable and he feels like he wants to play again, we'll get the game going. So I appreciate your support, and good luck, Joe. Who's this guy thinks he is?
Oh, man, that's great. That is great.
My favorite people were the ones that made the final table in the Omaha event, who were at my table earlier in the tournament. One guy was, and it's totally clueless. So he's playing, he knocked me out with when he flopped a set with a queen nine in his hand in the Omaha tournament. He played queen nine for like three bets before the flop.
Oh, man.
And he flopped a boat and knocked me out. The other guy was who made the final table was at my table from the beginning all the way through. And he was very talkative, and he was making some, what he was telling everybody were big laydowns. He said, I just laid down A6, Jack 10. I mean, that's a pretty big, that's a good hand. I mean, that was single suited, too.
So, wait, you were playing against a guy who asked you about Flomax? And
they were BFFs.
I think that's the same. That's the only accent I do.
Yeah, what is that accent, by the way? I'm trying to place it in the country,
yes,
somewhere, and I'm not sure what it is.
Anyway.
Mike was making fun of my southern accent the entire time. I'm glad somebody came up and said, hey.
Apparently, queen nine blank blank and ace six blank blank are great hands, wow, in Omaha, and both of these guys made the final table.
But, and I also found out, I sat down at my table, and I had a couple good Omaha players in my Omaha tournament, and we were talking a little bit, and they're like, yeah, I'm pretty sure probably half this field here is not very good at Omaha. And I'm like, half? And they ended up getting like 200 people for this. I'm like, so you mean 100 people in this tournament are not very good Omaha players? I'm like, no, I'm not even that, but I don't think they understand the game. I'm like, are you serious?
And that was a decent buy-in, too.
It was, yeah, it was a 340 buy-in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So about 10 minutes later, they were dealing a nine-hander for a while, and then they released a 10 seat. So they put a guy at our table in the 10 seat. He sits down about three hands in. Is this high or high-low?
Oh, no.
And we kind of gave him that stunned deer in headlights look. it's high-low. Oh, okay, great, thanks. You know, I haven't played this in a while. I haven't played this since Katrina, so, all right, that's good to know, thanks. So like, I'm like, oh my God, maybe they're right. Five hands later, the guy goes, how come I didn't get a low there? And, of course, you know, I wasn't going to say anything, but one of the other guys was, oh, you know, it's three cards, eight or low. Oh, this is eight or better!
It's not Omaha, Omaha high-low regular.
Yeah, yeah. And five hands later, who had all the chips on the table?
Oh, no. Yeah.
That clown.
Well, at my table, there was a guy who was an older gentleman who was a nice enough guy, but he maybe had some trouble seeing the cards, and he was saying, after a couple different hands, he said, "Is there a low out there?" And the guy next to him says, "No, there's no low." And I mean, there's still betting going on. I said, what is this? Is this Omaha school? You can't tell him that there's no low out there. Anyway, it was pretty wild. And it usually, I'm sure Scott had his share of this too in the Omaha. The fights, the arguments, the live deuces, the live A's.
Always in Omaha.
How to chop the pot. No, you can't put that in there. You got to put that there first, and then you chop it, and blah, blah, blah. You know, it was, it's madness. Just madness.
Yeah. Wow. Actually, I got up at one point because Fast and I were at adjoining tables, and I just threw my radio down and came over and tapped him on the shoulder. I'm like, I can't handle this. One dealer at the table, that's all we need. But all right, we'll probably get moving on here, but we got to talk about the cash games a little bit, because the reason I played the Omaha event, Chris, is because I did so well in the cash games the night before. I had a great run at the 4-8 Omaha. Got a little too big for my britches, played that Omaha event, and then I sat down at the 10-20 with a half-kill Omaha 8 game.
That's crazy.
And that's exactly what Fassel said, and my bankroll. Well, I would agree with you.
So the half kill, I mean, it was 15-30, right? Oh, man, that's crazy.
But you know, I was riding the rush.
And you had a really big session at the 4-8 table, right?
Yeah, but so then I moved back to the kiddie pool game and cleaned up there, too.
Scott
but.
Killed the 4-8 games. Yeah. I mean, he killed the 4-8 Omaha, and he killed the 4-8 Hold'em. He had stacks at the 4-8 Hold'em game the last night. It looked like one of those, that big
Jenga.
It like a Jenga. Exactly. It was up to, literally up to his eyeballs.
Wow.
It was awesome.
I only had four stacks. I was saying how high I could go. Yeah. I was waiting for some idiot to kick the table and knock it down. But,
oh, man.
But they're too nice in the South to do that. and then I had a hand, people don't like to hear bad beats, but, you know, I played a little bit at the aisle and had a lady there like, "Why did you fold that? That's a jackpot hand." And I hate that, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I hope I get a jackpot hand this time. Oh, I can't chop now because, well, it's really not prudent for me to chop right now because you learned a little code. So of course, I didn't get a jackpot hand, so I'm going to go back to the bow. I get dealt pocket kings. Flop comes ace, ace, ace. Pretty good flop, right?
That's pretty good.
Guess what my opponent had?
Ace?
An ace. An ace.
Oh, the one.
And aces full of kings beaten is not a bad beat.
No.
In that room, because I didn't have an ace in my hand.
Oh, no way. Doesn't even make sense.
You got to have quad fives or better beat at the bow to get the jackpot.
Ah, okay.
Oh, okay.
But the other hand that, Scott, we on our way out of town, we went to New Orleans. By the way, we had a fabulous lunch at Commander's Palace.
Very nice. Excellent suggestion from my dining companion.
And then we went to the Harrah's Casino. Scott is sitting there in the, was it Hold'em? When you had the pocket kings?
Yes, we were playing half and half. It was during the Hold'em rotation.
He's on the button. He three bets with pocket kings. He gets one taker. The flop comes out.
Ace, king, ace.
Ace, king, ace. Isn't that terrific?
Oh, no.
Check. Scott bets. Call. Bets the turn. Call. River comes out. It's a five.
Oh, no.
Yes, yes.
Ace, five?
Ace, five.
Oh.
Rivered on the ace, five with his pocket kings. Loses a huge pot.
Player checks, table six.
Oh, my God.
That was horrible.
All right, well, I'll end it because I got one piece of great advice from our good friends out in the South. I mean, they're all whimsical. They got these great sayings and stuff, and this is one I haven't heard before. After this guy won a nice pot on the river, and this was before I lost all my money through the river. He's like, "If there were no river, there wouldn't be any fish." I like that. I'm going to use that.
That's pretty good. And, of course, if you're playing Ocean at the IP in Vegas, there'd be no whales. That's awesome. Well, great. You guys had a great trip, and I mean, as far as stories and stuff, it was a great trip.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It cost me a lot of money, but it was worth it, I think.
Mike, are you going to stick around for our hand of the week?
Yeah, I'll stick around.
All right, because I've been up since. I mean, I stayed up like 24 hours, so I'll let you do the hand of the week with Scott, and I'll just like kind of fall asleep in the corner. And if I hear anything crazy, I'll wake up. But it's all yours.
Hey, this is Hoyt Corkins, and I'm listening to Annie Up.
All right, no snoring, Chris, here. All right, now, you know what? Faso was on the show today, right? So I thought, why not make this an ante-up home game hand of the week?
Cool.
We got a hand submitted from our good friend Dr. Frank Toscano, who plays in our home game. And since the three of us play with him, too, I don't know whether we have any amazing insight into Dr. Frank's game that we can add to this.
Is it a hand that we are all present
no,
for?
No, no, no,
oh,
no.
Okay, okay.
But, you know, hey. We know him a little bit better than the average squirrel, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
All right, here we go. He was playing in a live No Limit Hold'em 10-person cash game in a local card room. $1, $1 blinds, $60 max buy-in. Sounds like my kind of kiddie game. All right, the previous table broke, so he's moved to a new table. He had about $125, one of the bigger stacks of the table. Most people had $100, some were $60, and a couple players down at $30. Kind of typical of that game, right? The villain in this hand is a young kid wearing a funky hat sitting to my immediate left. That's probably about 7 of the people at that table. He had about $70. He had played only one hand, so we don't have a read on this guy, all right? Villain was under the gun, and min raised to $2. I wonder if he has a little bike and delivers newspapers for John Cusack. I'll pause for people to get that reference.
Yeah, we all get the better off dead
all
reference.
Right, okay.
Let's go on with the hand.
All right, four players call, including the button, small blind folds, and Dr. Frank looks down to see king of clubs, five of clubs.
Let's take a flop. Let's call the raise. And
you guys are crazy. You're going to call $1 with a king clubs and five clubs? All right. So he calls the $12 in the pot. Flop comes king of hearts, ten of clubs, seven of diamonds. We are first to act. What do we do with top pair, crappy kicker?
Everyone's looking at me here.
Wake up, Chris. We need help.
All right. I'd bet like $10, see where I stand.
$10 into the $13 pot. All right. What are you doing, Faso?
I'm probably going to check this flop.
Yep. You're a little girl like me, right?
Well, here's the thing. My idea would be to check it and then put in a min raise if somebody bets and then see where I am that way.
And then play the rest of it.
Then I could take it down with more money in the pot.
All right. All right. Let's see what Frank here. He says he's out of position with five players yet to act. He wanted to keep the pot small and wanted to see who else might have a king, so he checks.
All
score
right.
One for Faso and Scott. Chris, you're a loser.
It's a hand of the week. He sent in the hand of the week because he lost the hand of the week, probably. So
we don't know that.
We'll
he could have won.
All right, we'll see.
All right, the under-the-gun player bets $5. Everyone folds around to the button, who moves all in for his last six.
Okay. Well,
big pot here. Big, big pot. Passing out $24, and it's $6 for Frank to call. What should he do?
I think I just flat here. Is that the right word?
Way to use the vernacular. I like it.
Hey, you know, you guys seem to know it all. Go ahead. We're going to flat it here, all right? Since we didn't take my advice and bet out and get this other guy to fold his $5 bet, all right, we'll just flat it here.
And what would you do, Scott?
That sounds like kind of what I would do here.
All right.
With the intention of taking this away on the turn. I'm going to get aggressive on the turn.
Eventually, we're going to grow some.
And if I don't get aggressive on the turn, I'm going to get aggressive on the river. If I don't get aggressive there...
And otherwise, I'm going to check it down.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm going to be aggressive on the next hand.
And if there were no river, there would be no fish.
All right, so here's what Frank was thinking. He says, I know that if the villain had a king, his kicker has got to be better than mine. Pretty good analysis there, since only three kickers were worse. Maybe ace, king, or queen, but his range is fairly wide. His min raise and rather small C bet really could be anything from ace, ace, to small pair to suited connectors. I would actually throw in there any two cards. Frank is getting 4-1 on his money, so he's not folding. He considered a raise here, but had such a weak kicker. The villain had been playing fairly tight. I know the button's all-in raise is not large enough to allow the villain to re-raise. So if I call here, the action will end when the villain calls the extra dollar.
That's a good point.
Score one for Dr. Frank.
All so right. Frank and I and Scott all agree on the first two streets. That can't be right.
All right. Decides the end of the action with the call. Villain calls the extra buck. We're up to $31 in the pot. One player all in. We're heads up against the villain. Turn is the two of diamonds, giving us a king of hearts, ten of clubs, seven of diamonds, deuce of diamonds. And Frank, of course, is first to act.
All right, Scott, what do you do?
Well, we got to get aggressive here now, right? Because that's what we said we were going to do.
We promised we would. There's a 30-something odd dollar pot.
30 in the pot. I'm going to bet 15 here. I'm going to take a stand. Call me Custer.
I agree with Scott. I think you have to bet here.
Go on. I like just sitting here and letting you guys do it, but I'm going to disagree, but I'm going to check.
Oh, you're going to check
he's
now.
He's going to check. All right.
I was looking for information.
Top.
I was looking for more information on the first chance to bet. Now I'm just going to see what this guy does and check.
All right. So we have no information because we played it the way we were going to play it, right?
Right.
And now you're screwed, and now you got your little get-out-of-free-jail-free
no,
card.
Right? I was looking for information. You wouldn't let me do that. Now we're playing it your flat way. So in that instance, since I played it that way up to this point, I have to check now.
All right. Dr. Frank agrees with Chris. I never liked the doctor. I never did. I figure that this card changes nothing, and the villain had a better king than me or a set. He'll bet out again, and depending on the size of the bet, I will probably check call. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes.
All right, the villain also checks.
Well, that means we're ahead. There's no doubt. We got information from that check.
Let's go to the river.
All right, the river brings the 10 of spades. The board now is king of hearts. 10 of clubs, 7 of diamonds, deuce of diamonds, 10 of spades. We are first to act.
We're screwed. We're screwed. This guy has a 10 in his hand. And if we had bet out in the beginning of the hand, we probably would know that. But now, he would probably would have folded. Now, we're screwed. I have no idea what happens in the hand. I'm going to look like an ass when this is over, I'm sure, but well, I think we're screwed.
In general, you're going to look like an ass, so it's just a matter of the degrees of it. But all right, now Frank says he thinks maybe he doesn't have a king at all.
I think that would...
Probably not a set either. He's feeling a little better. He figures the river's a good card for me because the second pair means I no longer need to play that crappy little five of clubs. Kings and tens with a seven kicker. I want to make looks like a value bet about a third of the pot, so I push out $10.
Well, I have to say that I agree with Frank. I probably would have bet something like that myself.
Check. Check. Check, Frank. Check.
All right, well, here's the thing. Now, you know, if you play back the hand, a 10 is a very likely
very
holding
painful,
for our villain.
What, like ace 10 or something
the
like
min
that?
Raise, the min raise. You could have 9, 10, or jack 10.
Min raise, and then, you know,
to me, min
weak-ish
bet. Min raise only means one thing in these games. It means aces.
It means aces. Well, in that case, we're beating two then, right? All right, so... So Frank pushes out $10. Surprise! The villain fumbles with his chip and raises 10 more. So he's a serial min raiser.
I guess
you have to call, right? I mean, there's so much money out there for $10 to see what he has, see how he plays, and you're gonna get like 8-1 on your money. You got to call or 7-1 on your money or whatever. You got to call now. Terribly, it's a crying call.
Yeah.
Or a screaming call if you're Chris.
All right, well,
go ahead.
All
Scott,
right, no more. All right.
I'd be tempted to fold here.
Oh, you would? Oh, my God.
Wow.
Do you see why I came back broke from Biloxi?
Yeah. We need to have Fasso on the show every week, so I'm not the girl.
Oh, man. All right, what happened?
All right, so Frank says his raise made me think that he had a king after all, or maybe a 10. Split the pot with any king weaker than King 8. Beaten by King 8, King 9, King 10, King Jack. Who has time to figure this all out?
Not only that, but those are none of the hands he put him on when the hand started. Now all of a sudden he conveniently finds these hands that, you know, he could beat or tie? That ain't happening.
All right, well, he's getting to that point. In fact, it seemed like there wasn't much I could beat. We're with you on that one, our friend. But he was getting 5-1, so should I call or save the $10? In the end, he decided I was beat and folded like Fasso. Can we put that on a t-shirt? What? Folded like Fasso. villain turns over.
One of the hands I said before, Jack 10, 9, 10, something like that.
Would you believe Queen, Queen?
Wow.
I would not believe Queen, Queen. I think that's a lie.
I think betting out after the flop might have helped here, but...
Oh, sure, Johnny come lately here.
Wow.
Betting out on the flop now.
Scott, I think you and I played it wrong on every single street.
Yeah. Well,
and Chris was right.
First time for everything. Well, Frank, thanks for sending us that awesome hand. Made us all laugh. It was great. But we're not going to give him anything, right? Because he's we don't ever give him anything.
He's a doctor. He owns his own business. He drives a Mercedes. Not only that, but he's a famous doctor because we've made him famous with Annie O.
He'll be the first to tell you that that's the company car.
Yeah, well, still, he still drives a Mercedes. You don't see me driving around a Mercedes. So no swag for you, Frank.
No swag for you.
But at least you won the pot. Oh, sorry. No, you didn't. You fall in. But thanks, Mike, for ringing in.
And, Mike, thanks for coming down today. It's great to have you back.
Good to see you guys.
And send your hands a week and letters and mailbags and everything to podcast at andyupmagazine.com. Next week, we hope to have Lee Childs back, right?
Yep, very true. Working out his schedule, working out our schedule, and it'll be on the crappy Skype again, so you can all bitch about my levels and how I sound like I'm in a hallway down the street somewhere with muffled, you know.
Well, but, it's true, you are. We got to get you a better studio.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.